Space travel is humanity's biggest dream. To not only roam and explore our beautiful Earth, but venture beyond and discover new beautiful things and places among the stars. In order to do so, we need to create the first ever space colony from which we can start our explorations. You are going to listen to a podcast in which you take a tour through Rubus Eunus, the first city on Mars. At this point, the city is well developed. The tour will take you through a few important sectors of the city and will provide information on the city's history, its well-being, spatial planning, infrastructure, agriculture, education, and other services necessary for a society to function. The tour will be given by the head of each of the departments. Are you ready? We'll start at the beginning, the foundation of Rubus Eunus.
We are now with the head of the location department. Could you maybe explain to us where we are standing right now?
Yes, our city is located in the Valles Marineris, and this canyon system can be found just below the Mars equator and is easily recognizable from space. So can you remember the Grand Canyon on Earth? If you compare this to our canyon, it will look incredibly small. Imagine our canyon has a width of at least 75 kilometers, which is almost more than 2.5 times the width of a Grand Canyon on Earth. Not even mentioning the length, which has a length of 1,700 kilometers and is three times larger than the Grand Canyon on Earth. The depth of our canyon can be around 11 kilometers at places, while the Grand Canyon on Earth is not even 2 kilometers deep. So we are dealing with a very large feature on Mars.
So why was the first city built here?
As mentioned before, the city is located in a very deep canyon. Because of this depth, the air pressure at the bottom of this canyon is slightly larger compared to the average surface on Mars. This higher external pressure is preferable to counteract the high pressure needed to live inside of our city. The site of the canyon also protects our city from the worst of the radiation. To make optimal use of the shielding from the cliffs, our city is built against the north-facing cliff. Another one of the considered factors was the climate. As you might know, the climate on Mars is much colder than on Earth. But similarly to Earth, the temperatures are higher around the equator, where the solar intensity is higher. And therefore, it made sense to us to build our city close to the equator. The availability of water was another factor, and there were some indications for the presence of water at this location. However, it was not known if it was actually there or how accessible it was before we first set foot on this planet. Therefore, for the first time on Mars, water brought from Earth was still used while research on water availability was conducted. Besides water and climate, another factor taken into account was the quality of the subsurface. For the production of food, it would be most efficient if the soil present on Mars on the location of our city would be as usable as possible. Of course, the Valles Marineris is also a very interesting place for research, for example, to the forces that formed this large canyon.
So what were some of the challenges you faced regarding the location when the first settlement was built here?
One of the biggest challenges when we first settled on Mars, I think, was, the large amount of radiation. So to protect the first inhabitants against this radiation, caves were created at the bottom of the north-facing cliff. It was the lower gravitational force that makes it easier to transport our materials from the landing site on top of the cliff to the bottom of the canyon, where the caves were dug. Within the caves, the first part of the city were constructed. The building materials used were mainly the material that came from the excavation of the caves. During these early days, when the caves were still being excavated and first basic systems of the city were set up, the colonists lived in their spacecrafts similar to ours now. When the first basic systems providing, for example, stable oxygen and heat supply were in place, the first inhabitants could move into their new city. For the first years, this underground city was expanded, research was done, and new techniques were developed. After a few decades, glass-like, transparent, but radiation-intercepting domes were built outside of the cliff, as you can see. And these transparent domes give people the opportunity to look out over the beautiful surface of Mars instead of being trapped inside of a cave for most of the time. And this improved, of course, the well-being of our citizens. More areas outside of the caves have been built over time, but the caves remain an important part of our city as they provide us with shelter in case of an emergency, and they still contain some of our most important facilities like energy generators, water processing facilities, and oxygen generators.
Well, that's very interesting. And now that we've learned about the environmental challenges that come along with the city on Mars, we'll continue the individual challenges and well-being in Rupus Yunus. Therefore, we have arranged to talk with Anna. Anna, can you introduce yourself?
Hi, I'm Anna, and I'm the manager of Fairlife. We are mostly concerned with people's mental and physical well-being on Mars. So you're probably wondering whether you could be happy on Mars. Of course you can. Let's take a walk and I will show you. Nowadays, people are so quick to send whatever pops into their head without thinking about it whatsoever. On Mars, all communication with Earth is slightly delayed by about 20 minutes. This would give you plenty of time to think about your response. Just like having a pen pal. Isn't that fun? Come along now. There's so much more to see.
So I was just wondering, are there other ways to keep in contact on Mars except from the written word?
Yeah, sure. If you ever get sick of having to write to your loved ones and want to sense of someone that is actually in the room with you, take a look at this. This is a holographic live image of someone back on Earth. You can make them as big as or small as you like and listen to your voice through the strategically placed speakers. As if they were actually talking to you. Give it a go. Say something. You'll find that it's quietly realistic in their response. No, you're not actually talking to them, but you're talking with an AI that analyzes your loved one's manner of speech. Feels real, doesn't it?
Wow, that's all very fascinating. And when it comes to physical well-being, how is that organized?
You might already know that Mars' atmosphere is 95% carbon dioxide, and the gravity of Mars is only 38% of the first surface gravity on Earth. That is why we have these cool spacesuits that are designed for your comfort. Remember those heavy, rigid spacesuits people used a long time ago? They could barely move in them, and let's be honest, they did not look very fashionable. Here on Mars, we have a new kind of spacesuit, which applies pressure directly on your skin. It is a form-fitting, elastic, and very lightweight suit, which allows you to move freely and be safe in the harsh Martian atmosphere. How cool is that? Speaking of mobility, you're probably wondering what kind of sport can you play on Mars? Well, don't worry, active people. Playing sports on Mars is a lot of fun. Let's have a look at basketball, for example. Yes, the court is enormous and the baskets are up 10 meters. That's because it's in the low Martian atmosphere. You can jump like a kangaroo. Come and try.
Wow, that was really fun. What other activities could you recommend?
Apart from talking to people back on Earth, there's a lot of fun activities to do. To get to know people here. We are a tight-knit community after all. Playing games and talking to people is very important to one's health and forms important bonds that ensure that everyone works together as a team. Here we have a leisure area where friends get together and hang out, just like you would on Earth, only better. Just look around and see for yourself. There are all sorts of games and movies. Feel up for a challenge? Try and beat Earth's best chess players as an AI. Our own very Jenny here isn't bad herself. Hi, Jenny. Is it okay if I ask you a couple of questions?
Yeah, sure. Who is this?
This is our newest addition to the family.
Ah, welcome. I'm sure you love it here.
What do you love most about our city?
I quite like the hospital. Being a doctor, I get to spend a lot of time there, and it's just fantastic. The equipment is nothing like the stuff we had on Earth. We use tiny nanorobots that can swim through blood vessels and target a specific receptor. No need to wait for a donor if an organ needs replacing. Here, we can create synthetic tissue through 3D printing. All kinds of technologies that seemed impossible on Earth are being used here.
That sure sounds amazing. We'll have to get going, though. Thanks for your time, Jenny.
My pleasure.
I noticed that there is a lot of attention for well-being in the city. I do have one more question. Do you also alter the environment on Mars to ensure the well-being?
Now, you might look around you, just outside, and notice that the Martian environment is totally different from the one on Earth. That is no surprise, of course. With this harsh condition, it is impossible to grow plants in the natural soil. In your first times here, some of you might experience some homesickness, also due to the fact that the red planet does not offer the possibility for thrilling hikes in the forest. But do not worry. If you're missing your closure to plants and nature, you can easily sign up to volunteer at our own farms, where we grow the food for the whole city. If hikes and adventure activities are what you're missing, then you should really come and check out our very first Earthy Adventure Hall. There you can find all sorts of fun activities like building, bouldering and skiing tracks. And if you're feeling the need for something extra, thanks to the magnificent suit we showed you before, we are able to organize hikes and trips to the Martian surface, where the reduced gravity will help you climb the most difficult beaches.
Thanks so much for your time, Anna. Now that we already heard different activities, we'll continue to the spatial planning of the city. Therefore, we'll talk to Peter. Peter, would you like to introduce yourself?
Yes, of course. Hi, I'm Peter, CEO of Spatial Mars Incorporated. Our main goal is to build the infrastructure and all the buildings needed. We have mastered the art of spatial planning to give you all the infrastructure and housing needed to feel at home on this planet in a sustainable fashion. I will tell you about the three most important parts of spatial planning: infrastructure, social cohesion, and social equality.
Yes, let's start with the first one. How is the infrastructure organized?
Infrastructure is of great importance to a state. This is the reason that there already was a large road network through Europe in the Roman times. The building you see behind me is one of our advanced high-tech train stations. In densely populated cities, like the city on Mars is, it is of great importance to have good public infrastructure instead of lots of car traffic. This is because car traffic would result in lots of congestion, and congestion is not only very annoying, but also bad for the economy. So on the city of Mars, we have built a high-tech public transport system which will get you anywhere in the city in a blink of time. So hop on! We will take the train to the energy area of Mars, but until we are there, I have enough to tell you about social cohesion and social equality on Mars.
Everything sounds so interesting. Yes, please tell us more about social cohesion. Let's start with what social cohesion actually means.
Yes, let us first describe what social cohesion means, since a rather abstract concept. Social cohesion refers to a kind of glue that should keep the society in our city on Mars together. Social cohesion includes social solidarity, shared norms and values, social networks, and a sense of belonging to together through a common identity and a strong bond with the place where one lives. It is assumed that these dimensions reinforce each other, while in reality it's more nuanced, because it turns out to be casually interconnected phenomena, but we will not bother the listener with this discussion. On Mars, we want to promote social cohesion by differentiating both the housing stock and the function of the neighborhood. In addition, people must be able to reach each other quickly. Within the neighborhoods, it is important that everything should be walkable, so that people can more easily make contact with each other. It is important that everyone feels part of the community in our city on Mars.
Yes, that is really important. You mentioned it before, but what is, for example, happening in the city to ensure social equality?
As history has shown, neighborhoods with a low diversity in demographic and or income groups are prone to become breeding grounds for a wide array of social problems. After decades of urban decline in the Netherlands, local governments, together with other stakeholders, decided to reverse this trend by radically changing the way existing neighborhoods were shaped. In the early 1990s, these urban renewals efforts included tearing down badly maintained dwellings in neighborhoods that had a low diversity in demographic and income groups, by replacing some part of the cheap public housing with more upmarket houses. Town councils and housing corporations tried to lure more wealthy residents to these neighborhoods, thereby improving the living standards there. Although this strategy has been criticized by various societal and academic voices as state-led gentrification or even urban displacement, it has been a mainstay in Dutch urban planning policies. But since Mars is still fully clean slate, building diverse neighborhoods for people from different ethnicities and income groups is possible without displacing others. Neighborhoods in a hypothetical city on Mars ought to consist of dwellings of varying price levels, subsidized public housing, middle class and high end. However, housing these groups from different social stratifications in the same neighborhood wouldn't necessarily lead to higher levels of interaction between them. To tackle this problem, measures such as public facilities should have an open character where each group is welcome, in order to prevent social bubbles from forming. An example of this should include public schools where children are enrolled in based on postal codes.
Thanks, Peter, for these insights. The train has arrived, leading us to the next important topic here on Mars, the energy supply. We actually have a very exclusive interview with the head of the department right now, Lydia.
Hi, everyone. I'm Lydia, and welcome everyone to the energy area of our Mars city.
How is the energy supply here different than it is on Earth?
As you can see when looking around, there are different kinds of energy sources in places right now. You see a few things that you might recognize from Earth, such as solar panels and wind turbines. Those two were the main energy sources when first humans arrived on Mars. However, when human population on Mars grew, so did the energy demand, and a huge switch was made to nuclear power. It looks a bit different than it did on Earth. All the kind of big umbrellas you see standing in the ground are nuclear power generators.
Do you believe this is also the main energy supply for the future?
It could be. However, it is hard to upscale the amount of nuclear energy on a regular basis because new generators need to be brought in from Earth if you want to have more energy, and they last about 10 years. So we can't produce that much energy on Mars. And therefore, researchers just landed on Mars to investigate the possibilities of geothermal energy. This is because the community keeps growing and therefore the energy demands keep increasing as well.
How big is the impact of energy on your everyday life?
Very big. Back when the power supplies were just solar and wind, there would be time periods when there was no energy, and those periods actually were very dangerous. That is why I feel very blessed with the current energy situation.
Thanks so much for your time, Lydia, but we'll have to continue already. Besides energy, one of the main important things to sustain human health is, of course, food. Therefore, we are now going to the agriculture headquarters.
Welcome, everyone. It's nice to see that you are interested in this aspect of our city. Here at AgroTech, we are responsible for the technology that supplies more than half of the nation's food. Behind me, you can see some models of the algae tanks that are found within our city. In our short tour, I will be talking to you about the ins and outs of using algae as a food source on our planet, and also give you a glimpse into our greenhouses.
I've heard a lot of interesting things about algae being used as food. Can you tell us more about that?
We use algae to produce a large portion of the food consumed on the planet, as it is very easy to grow and supply nutrients with. Furthermore, it also has a lot of potential for bioengineering, which really makes it the perfect food source. And it also aids us in providing a varied and tasty diet on Mars. So when searching for the ideal algae species to take to Mars, our ancestors chose a variety of different algae types with different protein contents, which allowed us to customize our food to everyone's individual dietary needs. Bioengineering has allowed us to modify the nutrients that are produced by the different algae species, and certain ones provide us with certain vitamins that are essential for our survival, while others provide other nutrients. One of the first vitamins that our ancestors were actually able to extract from the algae cultures was vitamin A, which is very important for a lot of different bodily functions.
So, where are these algae grown?
As you can see in the model of the city that is behind you, we have a total of 60 algae tanks, each for a different species. Since our city is located partly underground and the surface does not receive sufficient light, or very, very little light, our tanks receive artificial lighting. As part of the city's independence project, we have started developing technology that will allow citizens to have their own algae farms within their living quarters. Not only does this make them less dependent on the city supply, but it also gives them much more freedom in regards to their dietary composition. Agrotech supplies citizens with the necessary small algae tanks, lighting equipment, and weekly nutrient deliveries. Our idea for this project was to connect citizens with their food and really increase their sense of responsibility for their own health and well-being. We are currently developing a system that can be built into the living quarters, which will allow citizens to recycle nutrients in their own waste, which can be then fed back to the algae. This will not only reduce the nutrient extraction from the planet, but will also create a more cyclical and sustainable system, which will make our society much more efficient and less nutrients will be lost and needed.
These algae are so interesting. Are there other sources of food besides the algae as well?
Yes, yes, there are. So a portion of the food produced on Mars does not come from the algae, but from plant species that exist on our planet of origin, Earth. Our ancestors selected species that were best adapted to the conditions here on Mars, to the temperature, the water availability, the radiation, and, light availability, but also which ones would supply us with the most nutrients. Thus, we farm mainly spinach, peas, garlic, lettuce, and dandelions. And dandelions was actually quite surprising because our ancestors on Earth did not eat dandelions. However, all parts of the plants can be utilized, and therefore it was the perfect species plant to take to Mars. Now, furthermore, our greenhouses are located underground as well, like our algae tanks, and therefore they also require artificial lighting. Thank you for visiting our company, and we hope to see you again.
So now that we've established the primary resources, we'll move on to the other services provided here in Lupus Unis. Accordingly, we are now talking to the head master of education, Simona.
Yes, thanks for having me. I have a few questions to start your brain up after the tour you've already had. Are you a student going to Mars, or are you planning on bringing your kids to Mars? Before coming to Mars, you should know that the education system here is a bit different from the one on Earth.
So what would you say are some of the key differences within the school systems?
So the students are not divided up by age, but by broader age groups called developmental groups, and they spend most of their education time with the same group of students and teachers from the pod. Blocks are longer and breaks are scattered throughout the year, and homework is not a big component of the system. Students are engaged in project-based learning, which also gives them the opportunity to interact with their community outside the school, and lectures are designed to be consumed at the students' own pace, according to the flipped classroom method. Teachers follow a holistic structure, trying to connect different subjects. Creating a positive school community is very important, and this is why community involvement, also through the involvement of parents and other members of the pod, and the connection to nature are the main points of education. Nature is present both in the curriculum, with a strong focus on sustainability studies, and in the physical structure of schools, which always have a vegetable garden where students can play and learn about their food.
Okay, interesting. And what about the material being taught at school here?
Great question. So, the curriculum that our schools follow intends to provide kids with the important knowledge necessary for life on Mars. It is composed of six main areas. The first one is health. This area consists of nutrient needs, first aid, how to stay fit with less gravity, and how to prevent the spread of sickness. The second area is diversity and empathy, consisting of the subjects norms and values, anti-racism, gender equality, diversity in society, languages, and ethics. Another thing that we find really important here on Mars is environmental awareness and knowledge. This area consists of the subjects use and cycling of water, use and cycling of waste, basic knowledge about Martian climate and environment, use and production of energy and sustainable use, and sustainability. For the more practical part of education, we have the life skill area for example, mechanical skills and repairing, laws and rules, time management, gardening, politics, and communal engagement. Besides that, there is also a focus on how to engage in your community and participate in a meaningful way, which is shown in the subjects constructive discussion and conflict management. And last, but certainly not least, we have general knowledge consisting of math, languages, chemistry, biology, and physics, but best integrated, and also, of course, history, technology, informatics, culture, music, art, and theater, how you know it from Earth.
That actually indeed is a very different curriculum. It sounds very good. Maybe they could even learn a thing or two from this curriculum on Earth. So I heard a big emphasis within the curriculum on sustainability. Is this correct?
Yes. In the school here, sustainability is the central topic. Sustainability of our community, sustainability of our resources, sustainability of our children. Therefore, we try to focus on this in the curriculum in environmental and also social aspects.
Very nice. When I'm looking around here, I see on each of the rooms signs for the four different elements. Does that mean anything?
Oh, nice that you've noticed. The science or environmental aspect is covered in four tracks, which corresponds to the four elements. The first one has classes about the preservation and management of water in our community. Water is, of course, vital and rare here, so teaching the children early about its importance is crucial. This will be called the water track. The fire track focuses on the energy supply, and the air track on air quality of and in our community. For their future professions, it is also important that the children know how to use energy efficiently and sustainably, and how the air system works in our pods. The earth track concentrates on how life can be sustained on Mars, regarding ecology and life sciences. In combination, these tracks give the students a basic scientific knowledge for the sustainability of our community. But by providing them only with knowledge about natural sciences, we do not teach them how to become valuable citizens and wholesome individuals.
No? So what else do the children learn in school?
The other component of the curriculum focuses on social sustainability. These courses can include conflict management, diversity and ethics, and other courses that I've already mentioned. For example, conflict management is crucial in a tight community like ours, where people need to live quite close to each other and cannot leave the community easily. Teaching children from a young age already how to have non-violent and constructive discussions helps the peaceful community life. Diversity in ethics teaches them about our common core values like sharing and reciprocity and equality, and also that they stay open-minded people in a diverse community where the members come from different countries, cultures, backgrounds, and value systems. This mix of defined common values but also accepting and celebrating the differences between our members has worked well so far.
Together with all the different sectors here in the city, we try to.
So to wrap the part about education up, what is your ultimate goal as a teacher?
Not only for I really think that when my students finish their school people, and go into teachers, their working life later on, that they will be valuable citizens to our community. This is my main goal as their teacher.
Next. Thank you.